If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the One Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening, our seminar topic is the yoga of unconditional happiness. So, my friends, let me ask you, are you truly happy? I mean, unconditionally happy. If so, and there's no contributing reasons, no becauses, no anything, you're just simply unconditionally happy, then you're self-realized. But if not, you are like most people with moments of happiness and a whole lot else in between. The cause, I believe, of our unhappiness is the judgmental mind. So tonight, we are going to present ourselves to the Divine Spirit. And let's just take a deep breath as we do that. And call forward grace upon yourself and anoint yourself with God's love and God's grace. Just feel it descend from the top of your head and flow all over you like warm honey or warm oil. And ask that whatever no longer serves you, that it be lifted and dissolved through divine grace, and that whatever could be shifted in your awareness so that you could come to a recognition of the unconditional happiness that is your true divine state, if that could be quickened within you. And we ask this in perfect love, keeping in mind the perfection of the divine unfoldment in each one of our lives. There's a timing for us to hear certain things. There's a timing for us to move into certain states of awareness. And it's perfectly designed to usher us into ultimate and permanent happiness. So I would like to begin this evening with a reading from a book that I'm enjoying very much called The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, and I quote from his chapter, The Loving Eyes of God. Does anything in God's creation other than the human mind actually pass judgment? Nature just gives and gives to whomever would receive. Should you choose not to receive, it doesn't punish you. You punish yourself because you choose not to receive. If you say to the light, I will not look at you. I am going to live in darkness. The light just keeps shining. If you say to God, I don't believe in you and want nothing to do with you, creation continues to sustain you. Your relationship with God is the same as your relationship with the sun. If you hide from the sun for years and then choose to come out of your darkness, the sun will still be shining as if you had never left. You don't need to apologize. You just pick up your head and look at the sun. It's the same way when you decide to turn toward God. You just do it. If instead you allow guilt and shame to interfere, that's just your ego blocking the divine force. You can't offend the divine one. Its very nature is light, love, compassion, protection, and giving. You can't make it stop loving you. It's just like the sun. You can't make the sun stop shining on you. You can only choose not to look at it. The moment you look, you'll see it's there. As you drift back into spirit, you will see that those are the eyes that look out upon the world. That is the heart that shines down upon everything and everyone. Through those eyes, the most wretched of creatures look beautiful. That's the part that no one understands. People say that God cries when he looks at this earth. The saint sees that God goes into ecstasy when he looks upon this earth, under all conditions and at all times. Ecstasy is the only thing God knows. God's nature is eternal, conscious bliss. No matter what you've done, you're not going to be the only thing that runs it. The beauty is that you can experience this ecstasy. And when you begin to feel this joy, that's when you know God's nature. Then nobody will upset or disappoint you. Nothing will create a problem. It will all appear as part of the beautiful dance of creation unfolding before you. Your natural state will get higher and higher. You'll feel love instead of shame. Instead of being unwilling to lift your eyes to the divine because of what you've said or done, you'll see the divine as a place of unconditional refuge. Contemplate this and let go of the idea of a judgmental God. You have a loving God. In truth, you have love itself for a God. And love can do no other than love. Your God is in ecstasy, and there's nothing you can do about it. And if God is in ecstasy, I wonder what he sees when he looks at you. And that's from The Untethered Soul, again by Michael Singer. So, if you will, close your eyes. Take a deep breath. And focus your attention inward. And just become aware of who's listening to the speaker. Who was listening as I read just now to you? That which is listening is you as awareness. No matter what age or stage in life you're passing through, no matter what is taking place, you are ever that same presence of awareness. You are the awareness behind every fleeting feeling, every ephemeral emotion, every darting thought. You are the steadiness of divine awareness. When your body was in the stage of infancy, that same awareness was present. It is totally present as the here and now-ness of this moment and every moment. Just pause and take that on. Be aware of yourself as the listening and witnessing awareness. As an infant, you ate when you were hungry and slept when you were sleepy, and you were simply awareness without mental interpretation. Your new brain was not yet conditioned by experience. You were simply conscious and present as awareness. And the stage of enlightenment produces the same, well, very similar quality. Only in that state one has transcended the ego mind. But initially, as your experiences in your growing up from infancy, they began to impress new grooves upon your brain. Every experience leaves another groove, another mark upon your brain. And your mind, which is a state of energy that hovers around your auric field, it's not your brain, It is the, let's say, the available cognitive factor that you can access, that you have built through myriads of lifetimes. You begin to tap in to that energy as your brain develops and matures. And it begins to form in each lifetime new grooves of familiar patterns, which represent your conditioning. And as these begin to develop, your mind begins to take form in this incarnation. And that portion of the mind that interprets and defines reality for you, we, in terms of separation and differentiation, we have termed the ego mind. The ego is the sense of separate identity. And that you even as a very young infant, become aware that when you cry, someone would respond to meet your need, be it for food or a diaper change or a cuddle. And you learn to expect a response to your crying and your vocal demands. For you are starting to develop the ability to control your environment and manipulate that someone who came in response to meet your needs. And, you know, that's the very first formation of the ego. That sense of separated self began to develop, and with it, selfishness. Young children, not to be critical here, but the fact is young children are totally self-focused and selfish, believing that the world around them is only there to serve in meeting their demands and fulfilling their expectations. So some people never develop emotionally beyond that stage, but continue to expect the world to revolve around them, responding to their demands and fulfilling all their needs. Now, when, of course, it doesn't happen, these same people often turn into hostile, bitter, and hardened individuals. And they lock themselves behind walls of defense mechanisms. And this is the state of people who are really closed down. They're closed down to life and love and light, and they walk through the world like little clouds of doom and gloom. Now, we've probably all at least met someone like that, that I've just described, and they're much like those hardened kernels of corn that remain after you've been popping corn, and they simply won't pop open no matter how hot the fire is. Now, some people, though matured in age, are still immature in their emotional and psychological development and what they demand and expect of life. And these individuals will undoubtedly require many more incarnations to develop and mature into truly functional adults. But nevertheless, many otherwise functional and mature individuals are running similar ego patterns of demanding and expecting and the resulting disappointment and anger when the world fails to meet their needs or people in the world that they are expecting to do that for them. So without exaggeration, I'd say this immature pattern of demanding and expecting the world to fulfill and make you happy accounts for 99.9% of the unhappiness that people experience. So we always like to start with ourselves. So take another deep breath. And take a very courageous and honest look and see if you are running any of these patterns. They will be found lurking wherever you are feeling disappointed, dissatisfied, angry, and unhappy. Now you have to look and see who or what is not responding to your demands and expectations in meeting your needs. Have the courage to really look. who or what, in your estimation, is standing between you and your happiness? This is an excellent topic to journal about. Why are you not happy? Why are you feeling frustrated? Why are you angry or resentful? What conditions would need to change for you to be happy? That's a good one, don't you think? What conditions would need to be changed in your present situation or relationship in order for you to be happy? Go on, write it down. Not necessarily now, but when you're listening to the archives and you have a time to really sit with it and with the divine presence within you, the teacher of truth within your heart and mind, just hang out with the teacher of truth, Holy Spirit, and begin to journal. And as you journal, you can get it objectified onto paper so that you can see what is actually going on inside your sense of deprivation and restriction. Your core issues that cause your inner angst and dissatisfaction. You know, when most people encounter any kind of unhappiness, they immediately try to cover it up with something that is actually, if you want to know the truth, it's like an adult pacifier. You pop a cigarette in your mouth, or you reach for that alcoholic beverage, or you go out on the town and look for someone you can hook up with, or you just do something, if you're not awake. Probably none of you listening to this seminar necessarily do that, but you might find other ways that you dodge the issue of really confronting why you aren't okay with what is in your life. Maybe you hide out in the spiritual rationalization. Maybe you run to the movies or you call a person on the phone. There's so many ways we can dodge the issue of a very fundamental question. Why are we not unconditionally happy? Since that's our natural state, that should be easier for us than hanging out in states that are abnormal for us, that are simply learned behaviors. And unhappiness and dissatisfaction are learned behaviors. They're unnatural to the child of God that you truly are, the incarnation of God that you truly are. So ask for the light so that greater clarity and insight could be revealed to you as to what the core issue is that seems to be blocking your experience of a truly happy and fulfilling life right now, today, within the context of your present situation. And then write down whatever pops into your awareness. Ah, there's that word again. So pay attention. Who is writing? Who is listening to the speaker? Who is considering this information? Who is aware that there are issues? Who is aware of the emotions and moods and thoughts that pass through your consciousness? Millions of them every day. Who is aware and observing all of this? It is you. You, as the transcendental presence, as the observing, witnessing awareness itself. Be aware that you are the spectator of your life. You are the spectator of your life. What a thought, huh? So relax and enjoy your performance. You can only really enjoy life when you're not attached to conditions. But please register this difference between the feelings of unhappiness, the emotional and mental states that are continually arising within your consciousness, and you as awareness. You know, you can stop throughout the day whenever you feel, caught up, let's say, in the world. If you can, for a moment, just pause and remind yourself you're the spectator here. You're the witness. You're the awareness. And don't buy into identifying with passing states and moods and thoughts and events. That's the yoga. That's what yoga means, union, or to be yoked with the divine. So that's what's going to yoke you and bring you into union with your higher state of divinity, is practicing present awareness now. So look at what you've journaled after you have done this exercise as the cause, and see what message your journaling is beginning to reveal to you. Because the minute you look into an issue, the light behind your eyes, that is the awareness itself, pouring through those stargates of your optical orifices, when that which is within sees, and that's the only thing that does see, not your eyes, your awareness sees, when awareness cascades upon the journaling and your awareness is placed with it, immediately it starts to transmute all into the love and light of higher understanding. That's what's so super about looking at something. You don't have to do anything with it but see what's there. You look to see what's there. And in the seeing, you begin to dissolve all that is the block or the impediment. It's so simple. But look at your unhappiness and what you've written down that you'd like to change. And clearly remind yourself that this is only an interpretation the ego mind has made up. There is another way you could see this that would settle the matter for you right now. So be willing to be shown another way. That little willingness is all that is needed for that burden of heavy-heartedness to begin to be lightened up and lifted from you by grace. That's the grace factor. The minute you're willing to give God wiggle room in the situations and pains and concerns of your life, grace enters in, and it's like a deus ex machina that arrives on the scene and lifts the hero that's in peril up from that stage and deposits them in a safe place. That was a mechanism in the Greek theater. Which it's very handy to have that God machine. That's what Deus ex machina means, God in the machine. It's helpful. We would like to have that divine hand come down and just kind of pick us up and rescue us from our lives at times and the things we've miscreated. But the truth is, grace will do that. It will seem like you have been suddenly, miraculously delivered from a situation, because once you're willing to look at it and to return it to love, it, you know, you've learned the lesson. You're living a life that's laid down and surrendered to something that is greater than your human inadequacies. And that's always rewarded with an outpouring of grace. So this then is your spiritual practice, your yoga. You begin to trace every twinge of unhappiness, no matter how fleeting, to its source. Be aware that somewhere you have made someone or something wrong. And your ego mind has built up a case of againstness. So that is the root of all unhappiness. The addictive demand that outer things change so you can be happy. Kind of crazy, because we've come into this world as embodiments of divine bliss and light and healing and salvation and inspiration. And we want to, you know, to import that into this dimension, and then we want that dimension to make us happy. It's kind of goofy, don't you think? So the recognition of that fact alone, that your judgment is what is hiding the light of the world in the form of your happiness, will cause those patterns to begin to dissolve in the light of your awareness. Your awareness of this process is the light of your divine self. It is the light of the truth that will set you free. You know, religion and religious doctrines and philosophical and metaphysical processes, by and large, keep you busy doing something. That's kind of the old way. Do this, do that, and then you're free. But in the new paradigm, we move immediately to our divine inheritance and claim it by right. It is given us already through grace, simply out of divine love. It's not something you work for or have to earn or anything like that. You just need to be willing to see in a different way and to relinquish your judgments. We have to relinquish that tendency to tell God how it has to be for us. And let God be God. So learn well that any form of unhappiness is the concoction of the ego mind. And the immature patterns of relating and interpreting that you have no more need of. They have served in showing you, you know, what has kept you confined. And now you can thank them and bid them farewell as you allow them to be escorted by you to love, wherein they dissolve. That's where everything wants to go. Everything wants to return to love. Now you are ready to practice the advanced yogic path of unconditional happiness. Unconditional happiness. How interesting. What an interesting term. We're used to hearing of unconditional love. But we're not familiar with the term unconditional happiness, are we? Unconditional means no matter what condition, situation, circumstance, or environment you may find yourself in, you need to tell yourself, this is good for me. That's tough, don't you think? I mean, some things would be really, really tough to say, this is good for me. This is exactly what I need to experience as part of my practicing unconditional happiness. You see, now you've left no room for the ego mind to create a victim-victimizer scenario around the events of your life. Now, instead of focusing upon all the things that are wrong, you are looking for all the things that are helpful and positive and thanksworthy in every situation. You are now choosing to see how it is serving you and teaching you how to be unconditionally happy, no matter what the outer conditions are. Now you realize it is only your interpretation that labels a condition as negative or positive, good or evil. You can find a way to empower positive elements in any situation, to highlight and magnify the positive, and to allow that energy to boost you even higher in your awareness and vibrational rate. We're in a time now when, according to the indigenous elders, we're moving into an entirely new perception of the world, entirely new world view, in which the world is transformed into something indescribably lovely. And no, nobody really knows exactly how that's going to happen, but there is a consensus there of all indigenous wise elders that this is the cycle and the very time that we're in. So if that be so, what we're sharing tonight is going to enable you to jettison a lot of baggage that you're not going to be able to take with you into this higher state of consciousness. You're going to want to raise your vibration to the highest and most loving and positive state possible. You're going to have to relinquish the need to understand and manipulate and control and defend yourself against total vulnerability. Face it, you are 100% vulnerable. Anyone who fools themselves into thinking that they're not is hiding behind the defensive lies of the ego. You're vulnerable. You're in control of absolutely nothing. It's hard for you to even control your tongue, which is in your own mouth, or your thoughts, which are in your own mind. So how are you going to control what's going to happen as we make this massive transformation of consciousness? But consider this. You had no clue what happened to you during the 9 months you were in your mother's womb. Very few of you remember being born. Fewer still even remember your childhood. Oh, maybe a moment here or a moment there. Who is in control then? Who is in control when you lose awareness and fall asleep? Or are knocked unconscious? Who is in control when you take your last breath here? And your first breath on the other side. There's something greater than you that lives in you that is aware, that is awareness itself, that looks through your eyes, that is listening through your ears, that is feeling and sensing through your nervous system, that is tasting and sampling life through your five senses, that is moving into intuitive knowing through your sixth sense and through extenuations of all your other five senses. You have senses and bodies for each level of consciousness, not just a physical body. You have a physical body, an astral body, a causal body, a mental body, an etheric body, and divine bodies above that. Within the God realms, the soul body, and so forth. You always have a consciousness container that gives you a context, within which your awareness functions. You always have an identity. You don't lose yourself, even when you're not conscious yet of all the levels of yourself. Once you are created, you have eternal life. In fact, in truth, it's kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg? You came out of God, but what did God come out of? You know, it's interesting, in the original Hebrew in the Bible, it said in the beginning there was God, and out of God, God created gods, because the word Elohim is plural. What are these gods that came out of God? Well, they're called creator gods. And there are myriads of creator gods because there are myriads of universes and worlds and planets and systems. There's an enormous spiritual relay system of creators on every level that are facilitating divine manifestation. You could call them the spiritual councils of light or the spiritual hierarchies actually, and the overseers of creation. But these are the divine agencies and functionaries that enable open-ended creation to keep expanding into ever more lovely and beautiful divine forms. Our Earth is an experimental biological testing zone where a consciousness program started by the Elohim Jehovah, one of the creator gods, was implemented. And it has produced today's atomic race. And we were endowed with mind. Conscious mind. And we fell in our frequency during the Atlantean period and totally became identified with material form. And because of that, we lost conscious awareness of our ongoing oneness with God. And so due to that, we entered into a fictional creation, which was birthed out of that choice of seeing in differentiation and separation. But it's like a holodeck program that we turned on so that we could run through our own creation, experience it, and eventually learn the keys of transcending it and returning back to the unified field that we've always in truth been in. But that little segue was just to point out that we've got a very great universe and a very great role, each one of us, as divine functionaries. And when you get out of that personal, little, selfish, mini-world that the ego has wrapped around your sense of identity, you're like a flying fish that all of a sudden leaps into the air and goes, whoa, there's a whole other world above this river I've been swimming in. And, I love what the Bible says, where it says, eye has not seen, nor has the mind of any man conceived what God has prepared for those who love him. And you might go, oh, wait a minute now, we have to love God? Well, you got to give that love some wiggle room, or you're not going to be aware of it. It's going to be like that sun that Michael Singer was describing in The Untethered Soul. The sun's going to be there, but if you don't open your eyes and look, you're not going to be aware that it's there and that it's shining on you and for you, regardless. So unconditioned happiness is the state of your true self. That part of you that you sometimes call the soul, that is actually one with God. You're made out of the same stuff as God. Just like the ocean, let's say, for example, you're a wave, and your physical body's like a bubble that rises on that wave within the ocean, and then at some point it pops and dissolves back into the ocean. Now, people that are not God-realized do that unconsciously. Each incarnation, they rise like a little bubble on the surface of the divine ocean of love and mercy, and then they pop and dissolve back into the ocean, but they don't yet know their self as awareness within the ocean itself. But once you have received divine grace and you have been born into a higher level of awareness, born again of the spirit, then you're in the ocean and you suddenly become aware of yourself at the same time as the ocean. So the cup of ocean water and the ocean are identical in terms of their content, their nature, their substance. The only thing that is different is the awareness of the expanse, let's say, expansiveness. And that expansiveness is what you move into. And we could call that state unconditional happiness or paramananda, full divine bliss, or premananda, the bliss of unconditional expansive love. So that state produces a very, very high rate of vibration, very high rate of vibration. So to practice the yoga of unconditional happiness, your daily regimen would be to focus upon that single point of goodness in any situation, circumstance, or environment. Without exception, wherever you are, there is something that could be appreciated or enjoyed or give you some modicum of pleasure. We are far too judgmental of pleasure in the Western religious traditions. The Vedic tradition doesn't have any such inhibition. In fact, Krishna, that form of God, is known as the pleasure principle itself, the very principle of beauty, the very principle of everything that is abundant and romantic and good and loving and opulent. Now, they have a whole different metaphor for divinity in the Eastern traditions. You know, all the gods and goddesses are depicted as full-figured and luscious and voluptuous, and whether male or female, they have beautiful features and beautiful ornaments and jewelry and makeup, and, you know, they're beautiful. They're not the black, shrouded, hooded, cloistered kind of monks that you see that depict the Western mindset. You know, they wear bright orange and red. They don't wear black. Very, very interesting. You never see a god or a goddess in India dressed in black. Even the god of death is beautiful, Yamaraj. Even he is beautiful. So it's a different way of looking at life, but I think if you realize that God is the moment of pleasure, it's that ecstatic pleasure in anything that you do. Like when you're really thirsty and you drink water, it goes, oh, that tastes so good. Krishna is known as that pleasure that quenches the thirst. Krishna is known as that pleasure when you eat really wonderful, fresh, delicious, organic, properly prepared foods. God Krishna is the pleasure in the romantic exchange between lovers. Krishna, God, is the pleasure in life. Without God, life has no savor, no pleasure, no real beauty. I think that's the first thing that happens to a mystic when they have a mystical experience, is that they, I know it's true of me. You fall in love with life. Everything is beautiful. It's as if you had never seen before. Everything just sends you into higher states of bliss and love and joy. Everything is beautiful. The trees, the flowers, people. Sometimes I will look at a person and I'm just looking at them grinning goofily, this goofy grin, and they may be telling me some sad story, but I'm just looking at them and loving them and grinning because all I see is their divinity. All I'm hearing is, you know, God's song of love that is singing through every atom of their being. And that's what happens when you have your higher awareness opened, is that everything you look upon, you see the face of God, and it's a face of love and beauty, and you're in a state of worship all the time. It's a reverence for all life, and you wouldn't think twice to stoop down and kiss the feet of anyone, because they would be the feet of Christ, or Sai Baba, or Krishna. You know, that universal presence can take any form that you would prefer. It's your own devotion that causes God to manifest as Krishna, or Christ, or Sai Baba, or Rama, or Buddha, or any of the other divine forms of the Great White Brotherhood that you love. So, that single point of goodness and beauty and kindness and pleasure or positivity is your way to spiritual liberation. It's a path of, the path of beauty is a yoga. It's a pathway to light. So that is what it means to be vigilant for the kingdom of heaven. That is what it is. That's what it means. To notice the good and the divine and the praiseworthy in every person and event, and to leave all the rest to God. That's the very key of soul awareness in a nutshell. And as you practice this yoga of unconditional happiness, you become divinely entrained rather than ego mind entrapped. You'll be identifying with happiness and thus with God. For Sai Baba has said that happiness is union with God. And there is no happiness greater than contentment. And he tells us that no matter what is happening in our life, we need to say, this is good for me, and to accept it as a sign of God's grace. Even though we don't understand how certain things could be grace, we can take it on faith until we come to recognize it from our own higher levels of spiritual realization. You know, in hindsight, we can usually clearly see how events have contributed to our spiritual enlightenment and ultimate return to divine bliss. It's seldom that we would want to return to old conditions that we've outgrown. You know, it really, really, you know, and you can tell they're outgrown when they leave your life. You know, everything that you need is present in your life right now. When you've learned whatever it is that you are to experience or learn in that context, it will change. You know, that situation will extrude you and eject you in some manner into a different state. So unconditional happiness requires accepting. Accepting what is taking place right now in your life, without demanding that things be different. You know, you forget sometimes the creative factor, that's your own choice as a soul before you incarnated, and your subsequent choices in your life, how they've gone into creating the circumstance that you find yourself in. You know, you want to be innocent of responsibility here, but the fact is, everything is in your life the way it is because you've created, allowed, promoted, invited, welcomed it in some way, whether consciously or unconsciously. You know, you're always creative, whether you're aware or unaware, awake or asleep. So face it, your life is the way you want it to be, even though you're not are pretending to not be aware that that is the way you wanted it to be. You know, there's no victim story here that you're going to be able to get by with. I think more than anything else, the spiritual life is one in which you accept full responsibility for your life the way it is. And full responsibility for changing it if it isn't what you want to keep promoting, allowing, and perpetrating. So all lasting auto change begins first with an inner shift in consciousness. Nothing is changed from without. That's something you need to realize. Nothing is changed by outer doing. It's all inner states of being that produce outer shifts in the outer world. So things don't change in our outer lives until we shift our viewpoint. And that inner shift in our point of view is called soul transcendence. You move to the attitude of soul above the personal lower ego. Beyond your personal preference, your selfishness, your addictive demands, your expectations, your manipulations, your conniving, your prayers of trying to tell God how to run your life, all of that, you transcend that into soul transcendence or awareness, which is another name for the same thing. So we shift our attention to a level that can see the perfection of all things. And that level is who we are as divine awareness. And that divine awareness is capable of creating perfection out of every apparent destruction or seeming chaos. And once you've learned to live and let live without judging yourself, judging life events and others, then you're well on your way to unconditional happiness. The more you love, the more you live and let live. Leave people alone. Know that every person, including your children, has their own lesson plan, their own curriculum, their own karma, their own freedom of soul and consciousness, their own creations that begin to download upon them big time from the time they're about 14. Which accounts for the dramatic shift in your children around that age. So cut them some slack. If you set a good example for them by living your own life in spiritual accountability and practicing awareness and owning it when you have stepped out of line and launched into ego mode with them, they'll respect you because they know that you're not going to pull the wool over their eyes. You're going to speak straight and true to them. But don't try to live other people's lives and tell them how to live their lives. Who are you to tell another person what they have to do to make you happy? You know, we would have no divorce if we practiced this. It would be unheard of. You can't change another person, nor do you have any right to demand that another person change. Their karma is going to run them until they take responsibility for shifting their consciousness. It's just that simple. And if you rush to save them from their karma, you've deprived them of perhaps what they have worked for many, many lifetimes to arrange as an environment where they can finally transcend that karma. So don't be the one that's always rushing to rescue. Leave people alone. Let them breathe their own air. Do not judge them. So you learn to associate any ego-mind involvement immediately as the slightest departure from present happiness and peace. That's how you know the ego has got you hoodwinked, is that suddenly you're not happy and you're not at peace. So trace back to where that first entered in. Take a deep breath. Ask for the light to clear you and direct that unhappiness to dissolve into the love and grace of God. And you learn in that instant to relax. Let go and let God. Accepting things that are exactly as they are, as they need to be in that moment. And you focus upon what can be appreciated and enjoyed in that moment. You trust yourself, the God self within you, and the greater God within which all creation resides in perfect safety. And everything will in time disappear, but the love that you are, which is the love that is God. And that love is forever and eternally that which is. And that eternal isness is your own divine state of being. For your unconditional happiness expands into all-pervading ananda, divine bliss. And that ananda becomes the creative power from which you go forth to create new worlds, birth of your own divine love, your own bliss. Yes, beloveds, there is more, infinitely more. Be aware that earth life is but the green room where we run through our lines and get into character for even greater cosmic roles that we are destined to enact within the greater omniverse. We're just getting ready to enter the threshold of a whole new cosmic level of life. I'm excited, and I hope you are too. And with that in mind, let's take a deep breath and chant Anai Hu, which is a chant that is affirming our oneness with God, with each other, and with all life. Deep breath. And we bless all the beings of all the worlds. May they have peace. May they awaken to the unconditional happiness and love that is their true nature and state. May all of us open our eyes to the light that is, to the beauty that is, to the opportunity that this moment presents to expand into something absolutely amazing. You've been listening to Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command. And God willing, I will be with you next week. Adonai.